Greetings to you, my sweet friends. I'm feeling really good. I've been exercising. I've cut out sugar. I've cut out the booze. And what do you know? I feel great. I've been taking vitamins. I've been taking psyllium husk at night. Psyllium does for your poop what calling like an Uber black car does for your driving experience. I'll let you interpret that as you will. The point is, I'm just feeling good. Been drinking so much water, chamomile tea at night. It's great. Somebody should talk more about this. Somebody should, you know, put some books out or something about how it feels good to not treat your body like some old bag of rats you found behind a dumpster and decided to tap dance on. I mean, look, you peer into the maelstrom of the world via whatever hell window you decide to open up, whether it's CNN, Fox News, Reddit World News, Reddit Conspiracy, Reddit Politics, Reddit COVID Ate My Face, Reddit Justice Served, Reddit Conspiracy, whatever the hell it is. And you look out and what do you see? You see a hell storm out there. You see an infinite number of infinite bundles all strapped to each other with cords made out of human suffering. And it's easy to start thinking, what the fuck am I going to do to help the world? Meanwhile, you're riding around in this decaying thing. Not decaying necessarily because you are in a mortal body, but decaying because you've been lathering yourself with all kinds of rot. You've been rubbing all this different hell creams and shit balms on your interior core just by whatever it is you're chewing up. And I mean me, not you. I don't know what you're doing. You're probably over there getting some kind of special prismatic vegan enema in your beautiful body, your sweet, beautiful, sweet-smelling, tight-toned, glorious, trembling, orgasmic, beautiful body. But for everybody else, you know what I mean. It's easy. You want to help. It's a natural thing to want to help the world. You think, man, I want to do something. What's something I could do in the face of all this cyclonic horror out there? And it's easy to forget, like, oh, well, you know, like what Jack Kornfield says. Tend to the part of the garden you can touch. You know, and for me, that part of the garden is like my 47, am I 48 now? Year old body with asymmetrical love handles and slowing metabolism. And I love myself, by the way. I'm not fat shaming myself. I just don't want to be fat. But that to me is like the direct avenue towards like helping. And look, I know there's other ways you could help the world. You can go feed people and do all the stuff the saints do, but maybe start with yourself, your body vehicle. Start with that. You know, it's right there in front of you. You know, trim the pubes. Trim the pubes. I still got to do that. God, I got to do that. I got my hair cut today. They don't do pube trims as far as I'm aware at barbershops. In Asheville, probably somewhere. I wouldn't ask for anybody to trim my pubes. It's a private thing. I would never do that. A pube barber. We're just not there yet. I'm sure at some point there'll be pube barbers. But right now we just do it with our beards and our hair. But eventually when we get more comfortable with our human bodies and are no longer encumbered by the societal demands that we wear clothes, instead of walking around naked as God wants us to, there's not going to be pube barbers. But eventually it will happen. And then there'll be like, you know, already there's like pube styles, which is kind of weird. If you've ever gone into like a fuck period where you're like having sex with a lot of different people and you start realizing there's like a similarity in the way people are shaving their pubes. Like, what the fuck? Where are you getting it from? Porn, I guess, right? I don't know. What was I talking about? Entropy. Quicksand pits. Yeah. It's just a wonderful... See, this is why I love what Sharon Salzberg says. The healing is in the return. And that's kind of the glorious thing when you finally like manage to sort of break out of whatever entropic momentum you've gotten into. You know, whatever weird gluttonous riptide you find yourself being pulled out into the ocean of depression on, which is like, yeah, it sucks. But also there's this kind of like sweet possibility that happens when you just start making like little steps in a non-entropic direction. That is, maybe that's my problem, is I like that. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's why I can never maintain a healthy form like some of my friends. Maybe that's what it is because there's such a weird thrill in like getting inhaled halfway down the throat of the Grim Reaper and then clawing your way out. Well, we've got a great podcast for you today. Really good. Now, this is going to be a controversial one, friends. This is controversial. But I've been fascinated with non-fungible tokens. Doesn't sound like you'd be fascinated by them. Even the acronym sucks. Nifties. NFT. Non-fungible token. Ununderstandable, mysterious, complex, arcane, and something that has produced a lot of controversy out there. Here's a something from The Verge. This is a story on NFTs that was written by Elizabeth Lepato and Jacob Castronakis. It's on The Verge, and I'm just going to read the first part. Famed auction house Christie's just sold its first purely digital piece of art for a whopping $69 million. For that price, the buyer got a digital file of a collage of 5,000 images and a complex legacy of greenhouse gas emissions. Individual pieces of crypto art, non-fungible tokens, are at least partially responsible for the millions of tons of planet-eating carbon dioxide emissions generated by the cryptocurrencies used to buy and sell them. Some artists, including those who have already benefited from the craze, think it's a problem that can be easily solved. Others think that the proposed solutions are a pipe dream. That being said, I love pipe dreams. They're the best. And I do believe in a lot of Kurzweil's prophecies. I don't know if I'm quite a singularitarian, as Douglas Rushkoff has called people who subscribe to the idea of eventually uploading our consciousness into a machine, or maybe the idea that there's some possibility of shifting what's happening on the planet, all the environmental and ecological destruction that's happening, using some as of yet non-existent technological device or method. A lot of people say that's like just some kind of phantom pacifier that a lot of us are sucking on while the ice caps melt. And it was a real delight to chat with today's guest, JP Downer, aka Pop Wonder. Check him out on Instagram and Twitter. He is a rising star in the NFT art world. His art is really cool. And the story of how he went from someone working in a warehouse to a self-sufficient independent artist is personally very inspiring for me. And I think it will be for you too. Before you go into the podcast, I'd like to invite you to join my Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. You'll get commercial free episodes of this podcast along with a weekly or semi-weekly group meditation, our journey into boredom. It happens every Monday, and our Friday family gatherings. And also, if you sign up now, you might still be able to get into the book of erotic, absurdist short stories that we're all currently working on. I hope you'll check it out. It's patreon.com/DTFH. And now, everybody, please welcome artist extraordinaire JP Downer to the DTFH. JP, welcome to the DTFH. I am really excited to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. This is an honor.
Oh, man. Look, First of all, I love your art. It's beautiful. And I've got some questions I want to ask you about that first. And then let's get into the NFT space, which I understand nothing about.
Okay. But
your art is really beautiful. It's, to me, it's visionary. And I'm just curious, how are you making it? What medium are you using for that? Is it all digital or what is that?
Yeah, it's all digital. And part of my thing is I kind of like try to recreate comic book printing, the old process printing of CMYK.
Yeah.
But I do it on the iPad with Procreate.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I won't ask for your secrets there, but you know, having, when we made the Midnight Gospel, watching the amount of work that went into making it not look like it was something made on a computer, it was like, so like weeks and weeks of effort put into like how to do the frame rates and how to do everything. So holy shit, man, good job. It like, whatever you figured out is so beautiful. Is this, how long have you been working at that style?
So I started, so I've been a musician my whole life, you know, professionally, but then certain point when I was doing great and like gigging a lot, but you know, you still can't, it's still really hard to make a living. And I started doing graphic design and kind of getting back into illustration that I did as a kid.
Yeah.
And through that, like almost as a side project, I was doing illustrations. And then so when the pandemic hit and all of our tours, I was going to be touring a whole bunch last year and gigging a lot. And that ended. And like, I didn't even wait one day. I was like, I'm going full on with graphic design, wow, illustration.
Cool.
I'd already been getting up at like 4 a.m. and drawing and doing work for clients and stuff. And I just like tripled down on it and started this collection, you know, of illustrations. And I just tried to have it as pure as I could make it without any kind of outside, like, you know, not thinking about what other people would think of it, just knowing that I liked it.
How do you do that? How the fuck do you do that? It's so hard.
But it's really hard.
That's the, what, so tell me a little bit about waking up that early. Like, what motivated you to do that?
Well, so I've been, you know, I've been listening to podcasts and audiobooks since like 2010, like religiously. And, you know, I came across like Deep Work, if you're familiar, Cal Newport.
No.
It's about getting into the flow state when you're working, doing creative work, and having outside distractions shut off and things like that. And there's a lot about, you make a lot of decisions throughout your day, like 30,000 little tiny decisions. And so at the end of the day, you have this fatigue for making decisions, and doing creative work is a lot about making decisions. Like when I'm sketching out a new piece, you know, as literal as that, like I'm deciding like where this little thing's going to go and everything. But when I wake up in the morning and go straight to work, you know, I'm a lot more free in my decision making, and they come a little easier to me. And also waking up at that time, how it ties back in with Deep Work is that that's the time that I, with my lifestyle, can only time I can get that uninterrupted time, because I have a wife and a daughter, and she's like 2.5. Yeah. And so I started doing it when she was about 6 months old.
Yeah.
So I knew that I needed like 2 hours of creative work before that, at least.
Yeah.
So that once she woke up, and then it was just all about her for the rest of the day. And then at night, I'm too tired to like do that kind of stuff. It's just the way I work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, I figured out the identical thing. And I think a lot of parents figured that out, but then also it just happens to sync up with what people like Kotler, all the flow state people, you hear them talk about this early morning wake up, going to some place, and just that's when you do your artistic work. For me, it's like whatever the part of my brain is that's the censoring, insecure, you know, judgmental part of my brain, it just is not away. It takes longer to get up.
That's true.
And it feels magical at that time of day too. I mean,
it's magical.
It's like you're conquering yourself or something. You're
And I did like 6 weeks where I was getting up at 3.
Wow.
And that's like a different flavor. It's weird. It's like a little bit darker, like, you know, mood wise, like it feels weird waking up at 3. 4 feels like positive, and 3 feels like you're doing something sneaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's always, three's creepy.
It's creepy, dude. Because well, like my friends are going to bed and stuff.
Exactly. Well, you're so that was when I was really getting into this. Did I lose you again? You froze up. There you go. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Robot it out for a minute.
When I was like doing that, you kind of get addicted to it. And then you do start thinking like, what happens if I go back a little further?
And mm-hmm, yeah, exactly.
Cause fucking three, man, you know, I would take a drive at like three, wake up, go for a little drive. And it's like, there's either these like hardcore joggers, you know, and fully like just like out with their lights on running, or there's like people on speed running, yeah, you know, from themselves. But yeah, it's like before people start, you know, the mystical theory I've heard is that there's more energy. It's like because the day is just starting and it's all this fresh energy that you're consuming. And then as time progresses, everyone's kind of eating whatever that energy is, prana. And then it sort of diminishes. And so at night, that's why you're all tired and shit. But whatever, that's cool to hear.
I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take it.
So, okay. So when, do you remember the first time you heard about an NFT?
Oh yeah.
When?
It was like at the end of January, and my buddy Muse Bandit on Twitter, he just texted me and he was like, hey, Justin Roiland just put out a NFT, you know, this thing, it's digital art, and he made X amount of money or whatever, and you can do this now. And he said that I think that your art is perfect for it. And yeah, I had just been creating for about a little less than a year, these just square. And I, when I started the Instagram page, it was like a side project for my graphic design, like I said, and I knew that it was going to be like really cohesive, because that's what I was looking for in artists that I admired, that they had a very cohesive style. They made very, very direct choices. And so I kind of set up some constraints for myself. And then when you do that, it's like easier to start something, but then you can also just like move in and out of it and it doesn't change it too much. And so I unknowingly like created a pretty cohesive collection of illustrations that were like perfect for what we're doing now. And so my buddy hit me up. I haven't really thought about much else since then. I have to force myself to like break out of it and go and like take care of shit in real life.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so I put together, the ones that I wanted to start putting up, and a couple sold right away. And then I had like a lot of several months of like, you know, ups and downs and slow times. And then I'd sell something and be, you know, it's amazing. But the whole time I'm doing my graphic design and my other life and gigging when I can, you know, playing a few gigs here and there, but yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go to your website real quick. And do you mind if I just kind of read what some of your art is selling for?
Oh yeah, sure.
One second. Not to be completely like base, you know what I mean? But it's like you remind me of someone who like jumped timelines or something.
I feel like this, I mean, talking to you right now is like the ice, you know, the cherry on top.
Thank you.
I'm serious, you know, because like
that's
I
so
never
sweet
imagined
to say, man.
Yeah, of course, man.
Okay, so over here at popwonder.io, it's your beautiful art. I'm gonna scroll down.
So what you're looking at now are the additions, and so that means that any of these pieces, there's anywhere between 3 and 150 copies of each one.
Okay.
And so each different one has a different size. And so they're kind of, you know, the value is.
Okay. So these are like, this is like in the real world, this is like when you're doing prints, this is what this would be. Right. So.
Yeah. And then if you go to popwonder.world, those are my one of one originals.
Okay. Okay. Got you. So like I'm looking here at, this stuff is so beautiful, man. Prismic Falls. And so this is just a print, well, not even a print, an NFT that is $1,700. And so, yeah. But then we go to Pop Wonder. What's the address again?
.world.
.world. Okay. And look at like From Whence, which is just nuts. Beautiful. Folks, this is like, you got to go to this. It's just incredible. It's like a skull, but flowers are growing around it. It's just, but it's impossible. How am I going to describe art? It's incredible. You got to look at it. But
it's being birthed.
Here, am I reading this wrong when it says $413,000 is what it's?
The reason why it says that is because the person who collected it listed it back up at that price.
Okay. But we go back and look at the trading history, and it's still.
Yeah.
I mean,
like people.
Go ahead.
People. So Ethereum right now is about $3,000. And I had I've had a few sales in the last few weeks that have been, and they're secondary sales that have been, 30, like 20 Ethereum, 30 Ethereum. So 100 grand sometimes. So the people that collected my work, and like people are buying them new for me as well, but the people that collect my work early on really got hooked up, because a lot of people bought stuff when I first started and nobody really cared. They were still buying them for like a grand.
Yeah.
And that was like, I mean, think about it as an artist and a musician, like, okay, I'm selling that piece of my artwork for $1,000. I made it.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Just that is like, holy shit. This is like, this is a dream come true.
Yes. And that's the baseline, like if you can sell your stuff. And but anyway, so then some of the people that bought those for that price, like turned around and sold them for, 100 here, like.
Hold on.
And then the pieces and.
Now, again, I'm not trying to like, I don't want to, I think one of the wild things about NFTs, and for me, whenever I hear these stories of artists, like suddenly like, not just like doing what any of us would just be thrilled with, but like, exponentially leaping into a completely different reality. It makes me think of the singularity. It makes me think of Ray Kurzweil. It makes me think of like dimensional shifting via some kind of technology. And I think that's kind of what is so wrapped up in NFTs is seeing this happen to people. And it's spellbinding and confusing. And can you talk a little bit about that quality of it?
Yeah, I mean, you're dead on, because it doesn't make sense, in the old ways of thinking. And now the whole decentralized aspect of everything that's going on with the blockchain and cryptocurrency and NFTs, it's all related.
Yeah.
It makes it so that I'm selling directly to the people that want it, and the money goes directly to me immediately, and there's nobody I do collaborations, but there's not somebody that like gave me the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
I took the opportunity on my own. And yeah. And like you said, like just the insane, trajectory of it, and the way that it could go sideways for years and years and years and then shoot straight up.
Yeah.
And I just feel very like grateful that, and it's not the first thing that I've become obsessed with and tried to be a part of.
Right.
But I'm 38. Some people think like I'm like 23 and this is an overnight success or something, because I'm somewhat anonymous online,
right,
on Twitter. But I've been rocking in bands. I've been drawing comic strips. I've been doing graphic design and doing a million things. And I finally feel like I caught like a wave, and like kind of like you guys did with podcasting when it came out. Yeah. And so, you get imposter syndrome and like, why is this happening to me? But, if I step back and look at the hard work I put in and waking up at 4 a.m. and like knowing that, like the outliers thing, like I was just kind of like in the right place with the right amount of, the right amount of preparation and the willingness to like do it right as like the wave was hitting.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like definitely that I feel the same way about podcasting, which is, I started so long ago, and I got just lucky based on that and did catch that weird exponential leap forward. But with NFTs in particular, it's really caught my attention, not just because of like that what I love, which is like anytime artists are getting paid, something's going right. If you ask me, that's a good sign in the universe. You know, and maybe part of the reason people are so shocked witnessing like, you know, the success that a lot of artists are having is because artists have been so devalued, that art has been so devalued by the parasitic entities that form in between an artist and the people, you know, engaging with that artist's work, you know, and it's parasites upon parasites upon parasites. Now, not all of them are parasites. Some of it's a really important symbiotic relationship, you know, like a lot of people that I work with, I have to have them because I don't know how to do a lot of the shit they do at all. I would be fucked beyond. I need someone when I'm on the phone with them to tell me, you know, that might be the worst idea I ever heard in my life. Don't send that email. Are you crazy? What are you talking about? You know, that's, but you know what I'm saying? Like when you look at like the musician, you know, this, when you look at a musician, the many millions of like weird layers of people taking a piece of the pie between a musician and the person listening to musician's music, the people taking the piece of the pie, many of them, they wouldn't know a fucking C chord if like for $1 million they couldn't play a chord on a piano or a guitar, you know, but they're in there somehow. And so this, it just plugs the artist directly in with the audience. That I love. It's glorious. And so maybe that's part of the reason, but maybe it's something else entirely. But maybe it's something else entirely. I mean, because like the other like romantic thing about it, and I'll stop going on and on about it, is it's like we're witnessing some kind of implosion of the universe. Like the universe is being vacuumed in to this metaverse where these NFTs are existing. And do you know what I mean? And so maybe that's the other thing that's actually happening is like, oh no, they're not. It's not just like their art. They're fucking dimensional rifts. You're looking at these tiny little output points that are now living in an expanding brand new liminal reality that, or maybe not brand new, I don't know. But as far as we've been able to see, is that what they fucking relatively. Are?
Yeah, I mean, it's relatively brand new. That's for sure. Yeah, it is kind of like psychedelic like that. And knowing that it's immutable and it's there forever, and it can be your legacy if you do it right. And it can be something you pass on to your family, these things. People are already doing it. People are already setting up their, you know, wallets for their kids.
Wow.
Yeah. And collecting. And this is, you know, they believe, and I believe, that this is like a historic era, and the stuff from this era is going to be that much more valuable.
Fuck yeah. I mean, is that what the blockchain is? Is it our cave wall? Is that what this fucking thing is?
Right. I mean, yeah, it could be. So
it's like a cave wall where they didn't know, like, but as the, whatever the block, because the blockchain, now correct me, this is where I get really confused. The blockchain, it's evolving, isn't it? Right? The blockchain itself is like becoming the sum total of all the different bits of technology and art that are making up the links in that chain, right?
Yeah, and I'll preface by saying I'm an artist and I've just been learning about this stuff just, you know, in this year. But basically it's a ledger of transactions. So yeah, it is. It's just, you just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. And it's all, you go back and you look at the whole thing. And that's why, like, basically one of my pieces is like a transaction on the chain. And it's there and it's going to be there forever.
It's a link. Is that
exactly,
right? Is that,
the chain.
It's a link in the chain.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, the difference between, like, okay, so one of the controversies about it that all these like get out of my yard, people are like, it ain't on paper. It's not, you can't sell a JPEG. Selling a JPEG. It's not on paper. If it's not on paper, it's not worth nothing. Right? Yep.
Like, or I saved it. Now I can sell it for $1 million.
Now I got it. Oh, guess what? It's on my computer. Now I got it. You know what I mean? Like, people are fucking pissed about these things.
They're so pissed, man. Oof.
I have
everywhere except for Twitter and on Twitter. But like, I carved out my own little like algorithm, just NFT stuff on Twitter. So
it's like another, like, I remember when I was like getting fascinated with NFTs, I made an NFT and just for fun. Cause I was like, what's the process for making an NFT? So like I just grabbed a piece of paper, drew some, it's called the Seal of Eternal Value. And then I uploaded it. I don't even know what happened to it. Someone did bid on it, but then I felt weird about it. And then, but I didn't know at the time all the controversy surrounding it. And so I post this NFT, and it was like within seconds, somebody was like, enjoy destroying the universe. Do you like destroying the planet? Do you know that NFT used up 7,000 years of like, do you know, like, do you know how many koala bears were incinerated? You know, NFTs are made by tossing koala bears into a furnace, and then it converts that into the blockchain energy. But like, what was mind blowing about it was how quick it was. Like, somebody had just been sitting there looking at hashtag NFT and been like, you just destroyed 7,000 whales. You know, what do you think about that, man? I mean, isn't there some truth to the environmental impact that these things are having on the world, or is that bullshit?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some truth to it because it does use electricity. It's like a network of computers that are running, and that's like basically everything is what we're using right now. And, you know, and I can't sit here and like say that it's perfect or defend it or whatever, but, you know, and also like any of the articles that I looked up and was like, yep, that sounds right. You know, they're biased towards what I want to hear. Right.
Right.
But basically, you know, the Ethereum network is what, you know, we use for buying and selling NFTs, and it's there and it's going to be there so that it can create Ethereum cryptocurrency. And we're using the network, you know, and the network is, unfortunately, sometimes buildings full of computers that are running 24/7, but that's a server, right? That's Facebook, and that's, you know, everything really. So, but as far as I have read, and the stuff that I'm obviously gravitated towards believing, it says that it's blown out of proportion. You know, in the long run, it can save energy, because using cash and transporting cash and housing cash and securing cash and all these things uses a ton of energy.
Right.
You
mean the like Brinks trucks?
Yeah. Everything. You know, like add it all up. If you want, because that's the thing about the blockchain too. You can actually go through and audit it and figure out exactly what it's using, but try to figure out how much just supplying the world with fiat currency in every country takes.
You'll never know.
Yeah.
You'll never fucking know. Big secret, whatever the fuck that is. Who the fuck knows? No one knows that. I mean, it's arcane and weird and like creepy. You know, it's creepy when you see one of those Brinks trucks, you know, pulling up with their fucking magic paper and dudes with shotguns guarding them and stuff. I mean, is it the conspiracy theorist part of me just thinks, if somebody like yells at me on Twitter, you know, usually I deserve it, or I'm like, you know what, that was a stupid joke, I guess, or whatever. But like, when it's instant, that makes me think, wait a minute, that's too quick. You can't just like right away send me a like calculation of how much the NFT used or whatever. Just, and again, I don't know, someone maybe is just a real fan or something and just doesn't want me to make NFTs or something like that. But it made me think, like, is there some kind of fucking like push, like intentional pushback from bot farms against these things, because it's an existential threat to so many different industries that they have worked out an ad campaign to like try to like make it not work, because it's
that would make more that would make more sense than what's probably going on, which is just people, you know, they're confused by the technology. They see, you know, making money is really, really, really hard. Like, for most everybody in the world, like really hard.
Yeah.
And it has been for me my whole life. And then they see these kind of things like somebody just sold a CryptoPunk for $500,000. And they're like, oh, that's a scam. Or that's, you know, it's like a club they're not invited to. You know, and then the barrier of entry to get into this is so high that if they tried to, sometimes you, I mean, it's easy when you do it, but you know, you have to set up a few protocols and things like that in your wallet. And, you know, you have to get the Ethereum in there, and it's a pain in the ass at first because it's so early and the stuff just isn't like streamlined as it will be. And people are just like, well, I'm not invited to this party, and so I'm going to shit on it, basically.
It's, I think, fun, that's like, though. Yeah. Man, using it, I was like, God damn, this is some Star Trek shit here. I'm like going on the whole like connecting to Ethereum through your phone and all. It's so confusing and so completely psychedelic. But it's more than just the technical weirdness of it that's upsetting these people, man. It's like, I think it's like, I don't know if it's just that whenever an emergent paradigm pops in that poses like a real a possibility of like a massive structural change or I don't know if it's just some primordial power thing, which is like, you know, power structures don't want to lose that power. And the fucking industry around, you know, shepherding or helping artists sell stuff is like $1 trillion industry, man.
Yeah.
And if something springs up that not only like fucks with that, but like fucks with art galleries, fucks with every single level of how we understand this stuff, you know what I mean? You could expect, if it's not a conscious pushback, a subconscious pushback, but I don't know, man, I am too conspiratorial just because it's like, you know, trend analysis, you know, like these, like, I remember reading this cool thing that, like, you know, fashion companies like infiltrate little mini scenes. Have you ever heard this? Like, they get deep in there, man, and they look at what these kids are like doing.
Oh, yeah.
Or where they're spies, basically.
Yeah, you can tell when you go like to Target, like everything that was super hip like 3 months, 6 months ago is right there.
Yes. Yeah. And then in like the big fashion houses, they've got their fucking tendrils like, you know, like it's like we know what like, you know, big scenes look like, but they've got their fucking tendrils in like little mini scenes.
Wow,
you know what I mean? They're deep in kind of just trying to understand the trend before it's the trend, so, because they got to make this shit. You know what I mean? And then they also push it forward a little bit, which is why anytime like Gucci releases something, people are like, ah, what the fuck? I'd never fucking wear that crazy shit. But then sure enough, you know, a year later, everyone's in Target getting the exact same thing. So they're sort of expanding it. But my point is like the this NFTs represent the very beginning of pushing something so far beyond the business models, our understanding of value itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That it's scaring people. It's upsetting people. And if it is causing environmental impact, it's also causing, like, it's going to burn down a lot of cultural, a lot of like institutions that, you know, that will never come back, that will never recover from it.
You know, traditional art gallery, the standard is like 50% that they take. It's crazy.
Wow.
And they don't tell you who collected it. They don't want you to know. If the person doesn't tell you that collected it, the gallery doesn't want to tell you either. And also then if it sells again, you don't know, because it's out there in the world selling again. It could sell for anything. So now I know exactly how much everything sells for.
Yes.
I get a royalty. So you set it up for however you want, and I get 10% of everything when it sells again. So, you know, and that's like a huge revolution for artists, because now I have passive income from digital art. And before, you know, before that, it's like, yeah, you, you could sell a piece for $100 and then you get famous or you die and then they sell it for $100,000 and they keep it all. You know, it's like,
holy shit. So you don't even know your, you don't know what your value is there. And they're intentionally keeping that from you so that they can get the art from you at a hyper discount and then inflate it and get, you know, and make more money.
I mean, that it's something that happens for sure. There's great gallery owners that help artists all the time, I'm sure as well. But, you know, this new paradigm, it's like more on us. And I even, you know, wanted to have my friend like handle all the crypto and MetaMask and all that stuff, you know, side of it. And like, cause I was really busy and I was like, I don't know, man, if I could just make the art and then you handle all that.
Yeah.
But he told me like, that's great and everything, but like you can do this and you should do this.
Right. Don't create another fucking generation of de-skilled artists who have developed a dependency on someone doing like some technical thing. That's really, your friend's really cool. That's,
yeah, he's super cool.
Yeah, right. Because that's like, you know, another, like the, you know, it's one of the archetypes that like I find to be like, is like a sad self-fulfilling prophecy, is it's like, are you an artist? Okay, let me go get you a bottle, little baby, because you don't know how to pour your own milk. I'm gonna put it in your mouth and give you a bottle and you know, here's some ketamine and you just go do your art, little baby. You know what I mean? It's like, fuck off, I can figure out how to do this. You know? And so to me, that's the other thing. I'm really excited about that for artists, because that's how it's supposed to be. It's just normal. Like if you're the one doing the work and you're the one who not just, and that's the other thing, like, you know, people are probably pissed at you because they're like, what'd you do? You could just went to Best Buy, got yourself an iPad, sketched out a couple of robots and look at you now. Well, you know what I mean?
I can do that.
Yeah. No, it's that stupid song. Oh God, it came out a long time ago. God, do you know the song? I think Sting sings on it. You know? Oh God.
Sorry.
You play the guitar on your MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Your money for nothing and your chicks for free. Because they wrote that song because they're like, motherfucker, I'm a moving company. You know, if you're a musician, you're a moving company.
Oh, thank
you're
not you
I'm a comedian. We got it easy. But anytime my friend Emil, I've gone to his shows and like after the show, I want to hang out with him. And it's like, oh, no. I got to move. I'm moving right now. I got to load up the fucking truck and make sure my fucking expensive gear doesn't get wrecked.
Yeah. Yeah. People like want to go to the bar. It's like, yeah, every single one of my friends has had their entire like load of gear stolen out of the back of their car. I'm good. I'm going home.
I'm going home now. Thanks. Bye. No, I don't get to do any of that shit that you think we get to do. I've got to fucking try to get enough sleep.
Especially on tour. It's like, yeah, we got to drive 7 hours tomorrow and like go to the hotel now and stuff. So yeah.
Get your shit in, get your food in, hope the fucking room service is working. You know, that's with stand up. We got to do that. But then, you know, you just breeze into the club. You don't have to do some 2 hour fucking sound check and the sound guy comes in all hungover, or the sound guy didn't show up and the fucking some circuit blew, so like your microphones, it's a nightmare. But on top, but then also people don't acknowledge the process, the even before that, or like they don't want to acknowledge like, yeah, I also was like almost got, I've almost had my car repossessed, I almost was kicked out, I was almost evicted. You know what I mean? Yeah. People don't want to look at like all that stuff leading up to the point where, and you get to where you get anything for your art. So, you know, I think it's a celebratory moment for artists, but, but probably, I mean, do you think it's going to like, do you think it's going to last? That's the other thing, is like, you see all these like stories that look like they've been written by a fucking AI that come out and they're like, well, it looks like the NFT bubble is finally popped.
I know.
Like every week some asshole puts out one of those.
I know. And after it, a week later, it's just like, it's crushing. Yeah. I mean, obviously like anything could happen. The valuations that we're seeing right now, people could wake up and be like, wait a second, this is a lot, you know, of money.
Yeah.
You know, and also if Ethereum goes way up and then suddenly 10 Ethereum is 50 grand or 70 grand or something like that, then maybe you wouldn't want to spend that much, you know. So there's definitely ups and downs, and I'm keeping an open mind because I know these kind of things can move. But the technology and us using it for digital art, it's almost like a warm up for NFTs because because the technology is going to be in everything. You don't know. I would love to be able to buy my next house as an NFT and literally just click on my MetaMask and send the Ethereum. And then I get the NFT and that's the deed to the house. And that can be.
MetaMask?
MetaMask, I keep saying it's your wallet. It's like the most common kind of wallet for using Ethereum and buying NFTs.
Okay. Okay. So you don't mean like buy like a house existing on the blockchain and the meta. You mean literally buy the house and like just skip all the weird shit that goes into buying a house. Just
be nice. Yeah.
And you've bought it. I mean, keep going. Sorry though. I feel like I cut you off.
Oh no. And also, cause you said like, is it going to last? It will last in some way, shape or form, I believe. And, you know, this could be like the golden era and the salad days that we talk about, or it could be, we're talking about, this is the very beginning. And it was like, and we'll laugh about it. I definitely think we're going to laugh about all the crap we would have to go through, to do this stuff, like setting everything you have to set up, because I think that in the future, it's just going to be like, you know, as easy as everything else is for us. But
yeah.
And
what
then
are you doing? You don't. What are you using to chisel to go into to write in the rock? Mud to write on the rock. You don't need to use the chisel. Too much energy. Too much time. No one will carve on rock. Why are you? You know what I mean? It seems to be a similar reaction, which is like anytime there's a new medium to hold our symbol sets, there's controversy around the new medium.
And usually these high controversy things like end up being like the future, right? Like the things that get the strongest reactions out of people, like the internet, people thought it was a fad, and it also was really hard to interact with. And if you had a website or like a podcast and like, you know, I don't know if you have to pay insane bandwidth fees and stuff when you started your podcast?
No, I skipped that. Thank God.
Yeah. So that was like an era, right? And there's like, used to have a bunch of protocols and devices to connect to it, and the modem made the sound slow and shitty. So basically that's hopefully just the era we're in now, and everything's just going to go, you know, up from here. And music NFTs are something that I believe hasn't even happened yet. Like there's been a couple bands that released an album and there's been a couple people doing cool stuff, but when touring comes back in full force and people are carefree going to shows, and also hopefully like some of this controversy blows over so people aren't afraid to offer it. But I feel like having, you know, just like you'd buy a shirt with the tour dates on the back as a commemorative item from a show, you would purchase or receive for free an NFT that says you were there. And it's called a proof of attendance, and people are giving them out for all sorts of stuff now, but for music shows, I think it's going to be huge because you show up and you just basically go online, get your proof of attendance NFT. And then next year when they come back through your town, that one will get you other perks or discounts. And then you can get the next one and then you collect them. Just like people collect ticket stubs, concert shirts, anything, you know, buy the record there and stuff like that. So, and nobody's really doing it in full force yet.
That's crazy, man. That makes me think of like, the next, you know, generation of tombstones. It's like you go to see your friend's tombstone, right? It like clicks, it links up with whatever your device is, and then you get a little like miniature version of your friend in AR or whatever. You know?
You just put your glasses and
put on your glasses and you see like, hey, what's up? And then your friend like, can I haunt you? Do you mind? And your friend jumps into you, and now you've got this like little. Because this is the other thing is like, I think. You know, I've just been reading this awesome book about alchemy, and it's just pointing out like in alchemy, when you're looking at a symbol, you shouldn't just, you know, it's meant to be contemplated in 3D space with movement, not just, you know, looked at as some flat thing, you know, right. Like any of these, like any sacred geometry, when you like start imagining it. And that's the other part, is like the imaginative process is like according to this book, at least, is like activating like latent qualities in the human nervous system. But the point is, you should, when you're looking at these things, think of it in terms of 3D space and movement. And I think when I'm thinking of NFTs, in general, I'm thinking, oh, these are still precursor beings. Like an AI could easily animate any of these NFTs and then populate the augmented reality world with them, or populate the metaverse with them. You know what I mean? So really they're like eggs too. They're not just, you know, and they're going to be living all that's, I can't, I'll tell you, man, as soon as you have an NFT, as soon as AR becomes as popular as I'm sure it will be, and you have one of your little NFT creatures that I could pick up and that will live in my house. You know what I mean?
I'm doing all that. Yeah, for sure. It's happening.
Yeah.
Yep.
What are some other, what do you see is the like next year or two of this insane convergence of technology and art?
Well, there's going to be a lot more people getting into it on the artist side and the collector and speculative, you know, investor side. It's going to be, it's going to get a lot more saturated. Right now it's a small community, amazing community, and that's what it's really all about for this stuff. And people wonder, like, why could it be so popular and engaging? And it's because the community is engaging, and if you're part of a certain community of an NFT project, like, people really like identify with it, and they make it their profile picture on Twitter, and that's what their whole deal is, right? Like,
yeah,
and they feel like it's almost like a country, you know, like a country club, digital pass to a country club, and there's limited editions, right? There's only 10,000 of them, or there's only 3,000 of them.
Oh, that's crazy. It's some kind of fucking tribal and like initiatory glyph.
Yeah, one of them's literally apes, and they're like, you know, they're like ape strong with each other, and like, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah, and so, you know, what's coming in the next year, it's, people are going to be trying to recreate that a lot, and a lot of projects are going to come out, but also like a lot of people are going to come in and be like, I can't afford a CryptoPunk or a Bored Ape because they're hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, what's next on the horizon? So people are going to be trying to get that next big project. And hopefully just as there's like an X or whatever that crosses, like where people become more and more into it, and it becomes the barrier of entry lowers,
yeah,
so it's easier for them to get into it, and then maybe the public sentiment will shift about it as people get into it, because, you know, besides the environmental thing, then people think it's like money laundering, or it's a scam in some way, or it's I've never been a big complainer, and so when new things come up, I've always been kind of like, well, let me check it out, let me see what's up. But then some people, their default is just be like, oh, I don't understand it, or I don't feel like I belong in it. I'm just going to talk shit about it.
Well, that's art, right? I mean, that's what I love about the whole money laundering thing. It's like, oh, really? Are you just discovering what art is?
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Like, what did you just, like, that's, it's like a bunch of people are like, wait a minute, I think this might be more than just a picture. It's like, yeah, it is. It's so much more. It's a, it's a fucking, like, you know, it's a cultural, some of them are time bombs. I mean, it's like, you know, this, like any one of us who, and like gone into museums in a bad mood and looked at some incredible work of art, a toilet bowl, just sitting there. And we're looking at it and we're like, I could put a toilet bowl in an art museum. Right. And like, as yeah. though the creator of that didn't know, wasn't puppeteering you. It, yeah. Like, you don't even realize, you dumb fuck, that you are, that puppet bowl is like just making you dance like a little fucking puppet in front of it. Every time you say that, it's hijacking you, harnessing you, and making you do what it wants. That's fuck amazing. Yeah, it's, it has value. Fuck yeah, that toilet bowl is more powerful than you. And yeah, it's a scam. And you just fell for it when you were like, wait a minute, I think this is a scam. Yes, it gotcha, didn't it? And it's like, so that's the other thing I love about NFTs is like, my God, it's like the technologically hypercharged version of that. It's like making people seize up. It's just like freaking people the fuck out. And I think that's an indication of its power, for better or for worse, you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah. And there's real art, like you're saying, that, like, you know, there's the single pixel that somebody, you know, sold yeah. for, I don't remember how much, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's like, yeah, there's going to be that kind of art that like pisses people off. And it's like, oh, I could have done that. It's like, yeah, you definitely could have, but you didn't. And you didn't do all the stuff that that guy did for the last 20 years as well.
Yeah.
To get to the point where you are going to just sell a single pixel.
Yeah. 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 I could have invented fucking toast, but I yeah. didn't, you know, yeah. I didn't. It's too late. Somebody was like, what happens if I put toast in this machine? Holy, don't put, well, don't put your bread in there. Oh, you like hard bread? Is that what you want? Oh, you don't like good old soft bread? I don't know who this guy is, but he's fucking up society. He's fucking there. Up he's society. Out there.
He's on Twitter. Yeah, he's
what,
there.
What the? You know how many panda bears died so you could eat your hard bread? Now, to me, it must be really a little bit kind of scary to be you, in the sense that you're like getting, you really have just jumped in to this like digital river, and you don't know where it's going to take you, man. And so I wonder if we could maybe just talk a little, and if it just is too weird, which I often get too weird, maybe just talk about the surreal quality of your life now. And I would like to know, like, when I say, if you seem like you've jumped into an alternate timeline, or you're doing some kind of dimensional navigation via technology, or you're one of the first people who essentially just like blew out of a paradigm of like, no, you know, this isn't how it works, man. You're someone who just like popped out of a complete kind of like bogged down swampy terrain into, I mean, what seems like an abundant, fabulous kind of existence. Can you talk about that a little bit? Do you have any kind of like metaphysical theories about what happened to you?
Well, I'm still processing it, and it's still very surreal, obviously. And just knowing that, like my family's taken care of, and you know, that like, I don't have to hustle as hard as I've been doing my whole life, you know, trying to find whatever the next gig is and negotiating with people for how much they're going to pay me to do it and things like that. Cause I'm not good at that, asking people for money, because when I was doing graphic design, it was like a lot of times for my friends' bands. And so I would just do like whatever they could scrape up, you know, and like, yeah. That's like, it was real. Yeah. So now just knowing that like every day I just wake up and I wait for, you know, if I have something I need to, or I want to get done, or I have an idea, that I just start right away. But basically just wait for like the moment to strike and, you know, like an idea to pop, and I'll have like half baked ideas for a while. And then one will come through that's fully formed. And then nothing else matters for the next, you know, however many hours kind of thing. But like to be able to do that and then put it out, and then people love it and buy it. And then I just move on with my day. Compared to what my life was like before that, and what most people, you know, it's very surreal, and I feel guilt sometimes, but I also know that, like, the transformation you're talking about, like, I truly feel like me waking up every morning at 4 and putting in the hours over the years,
yeah,
was like, it was just like preparation for when this came. And I mean, trust me, like, I feel nothing but grateful for what I have and what I've been able to build, but I feel nothing but just lucky that, like, it all converged at the time that it did. And, you know, to answer your question, I'm still processing it.
Yeah.
Cause it's been, and I've been doing it for 7 months.
Yeah.
But I only actually got the real push behind me about 2 months ago. So, or three, you know, maybe, but like, yeah. So it's literally been no time at all. Everything else that I've done before, it takes years. And I've always known that it takes 10 years to do anything and to be good at anything.
Yeah.
And I've obviously been drawing here and there my whole life, but like focusing on this Pop Wonder illustrations, it's been a little over a year. And it's not supposed to happen like that. Nope. In my head. You know, but that's the thing. I've had like mediocre successes and failures and everything in between, like leading up to it my whole life. So I feel like, you know, and I've had like my friends that have similar mindsets to me where we're always like pushing for something bigger.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to, especially like your musician friends, it's a mixed bunch, right? Some of them are just like trying to not work.
Yeah.
Right. Which is great. And I don't want to work at a job or for somebody else or whatever, but I do want to like bust up every day, like, you know, do something to like further make my life better. So, so the people that I've been in contact with, my friends who have that same mentality, we've been, you know, talking about it and working with it and workshop and stuff and throwing ideas back and forth at each other for years. So, so I have to remind myself that when I start feeling guilty or
the guilt thing is like another, this is what technology is. This is one of the ways it's fucking with us culturally, is it's like so much of our value system is based on this kind of weird quantification of suffering. So it's like, if you suffered this much, then this is how much you should exchange your suffering token.
Yeah. Got me.
Suffering used to be the ultimate Bitcoin. It was like, you've suffered this much. And look, everyone's suffering, so the value of suffering is really low right now.
Right.
But, you know, but the point is, technology, because of it's making it so that the amount of suffering required to get to some point is reducing, and that doesn't make sense. It fucks with our heads really so bad. It can't be. Like, this is not, even though, by the way, it's been like that for the billionaires and the trillionaires for as long as there's been billionaires and trillionaires. It's like,
yeah,
you know, they've been experiencing that reality and justifying it by like, you know, well, my great grandfather invented aspirin. All right. That's why I have 700 houses.
Exactly.
You know, but like now, but again, I think it's this paradigm shift, it threatens that. It's not supposed to, value isn't supposed to just instantaneously go rushing to people like you, like, especially yeah. that quick. What the yeah. fuck? We got somebody yeah. in fucking tie-dye. What the fuck? You can't do that. And you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's, you know, it's like apocalyptic in the best way possible. You know, it's like this beautiful thing. I just think of it as dimension hopping. It's like some kind of technological dimension hopping. You shift it out of one timeline into another timeline. You're probably going to shift into another one. I wouldn't be surprised if time travelers start visiting you. You got to look out. You never know.
I will. I'll be ready.
It's one of the signs. You know, you start seeing people dressed in weird, shiny clothes following you around.
And, oh, shit.
Yeah. I'm not that that's ever happened to me, but it's a dream. Look, do you think it's the end of the world?
I mean, in what way?
Like in the Ray Kurzweil way.
Oh, right. Like we're just like barreling towards the singularity and then it's just going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense with the way things are going, you know, like, I hope not. I hope that if it does, then it's in a long time from now,
do you think that, and let me ask you this, what are your thoughts? Like, if you had something to say to the paper people who are like, it's digital, it's ones and zeros, you can't just do that, you're selling your JPEGs, what about you? These aren't canvases, you don't know how to paint, you don't know how to, you wouldn't, I bet you don't know how to put it in a, what, like, I remember when I took one art class, they were all, I stopped because it was like the amount of time spent on like how to stretch a canvas. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I just want to splatter paint on fucking paper. I don't want to stretch a canvas. But, you know, what do you have to say to the negative fucking Luddites out there who feel like you should be painting on paper and going down to your local fucking gallery and asking if you could get lucky enough to hang one of your beautiful works of art on a nail in their gallery?
Well, I've stopped trying to evangelize it, even though I know that it's important to reach out to the people and the naysayers and kind of like hear them out and try to, you know, so I wait for questions rather than try to come out here and evangelize. But basically the fact that it's not a physical piece is irrelevant because kids these days know that are playing Fortnite and Roblox and things like that, that digital assets have value.
Yes.
And, you know, the fact that, and when you do stop and break down to the right click save as guy, which they're called, who says that all I have to do is save this and now I own it. But when you really do like reach out and explain to these people that like, okay, well, but it didn't come from me, you know, out of my, it says created by Pop Wonder.
Yeah.
There's only one of them. It's up to me to be ethical and not create another one on another platform and sell it somewhere else.
Right.
But my reputation is everything because it's the community and people, you know, it, for the most part, I feel like respect the decisions that I make because it affects them.
Yes.
You can, you know, supply and demand. If I just like pumped out a bunch of crap, then the value of everything would go out.
Right.
So yeah.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah. So I kind of try to keep it, you know, just the good stuff on a slow drip, keep the demand there or whatever. But as far as telling these other people, so it's like, if you're not buying it, you know, out of my collection from me, then it's not for me. And then as far as just like the naysayers that want, you know, these digital artists to like stick with traditional art or whatever, it's like, I'm not a painter and I'm not anything. I started drawing. I started drawing on paper, like and a pencil, but then like pretty quickly moved to an iPad and it's all been digital since then because I became an artist like in the Instagram era and I was doing my graphic design as digital as well, you know, and just printing out. So it's like basically I'm like, we have figured out a way for a digital artist like me who all of their work is ephemeral and like, you know, ones and zeros, like you said, to turn their piece into a limited edition piece and put it out into the world and make a living off of it, you know, which before, like I literally started my Instagram so people would just like think I was good at drawing and like, that's it. Like, you know, like I never thought like it would become a commercial success at all.
Wow.
So. Yeah, I just wanted like I was already doing my graphic design. That was fun, but I got so much, you know, so much input from other people because they're paying you. It's fine. That I needed something that nobody was giving me any input on, so right. I created it. Yeah,
yeah, input free. That's what you want, man. Like, no matter what, it's always better to be able to do that. Yeah, I know, man. Damn, I am so blown away, man. You are so cool.
And shit, dude.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Can I tell you something real quick?
Yeah, please.
So like I used to work at a warehouse packing up boxes full of like acupuncture supplies, needles and herbs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I would listen to podcasts, go about my day, da da da. And one day I was listening to The Family Hour with Dean Del Rey.
Yeah.
And, you know, musician and I relate to him and stuff. And he was talking about how he changed his life and like went from working at the motorcycle dealership to being an actor and then stand up and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I like walked straight into my boss's office after that, and I was like, I gotta go. I'll give you a couple more weeks.
Really?
Yeah. And it was so I could have more time to do graphic design. And that was 4 years ago this last summer. And yeah. It was a scary decision, but it worked out like really great. And now here I am. And so it's fucked up, man. Right. It's fucked up.
And now we're talking.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
That's so fucking trippy.
Yeah.
Listen, whatever is, we don't know what's happening. I will never understand this, what's happening in the world. It's weird beyond weird. And whatever these forces are that are working to bring people like us together, I think they're wonderful. And I'm just glad that they exist. And that story, like, that fills me with a lot of joy, you know, because that's, yeah, you jumped. That's it. You got to jump. You know what I mean? You got to jump. I remember when I was working at the Comedy Store, friends with Rogan, and he would fucking, we'd get on the phone. I'm like, I got this desk job. I'm the talent coordinator there. And it's like, and he would just say like, just quit. Just quit. You got to jump. Yeah. Just jump. And I would be like, what? Oh, really? Just quit. I mean, come on, man. What am I going to do? Just jump. Go for it. You know, and sometimes I think that is not great advice to listen to. Sometimes you're not supposed to jump, but some, you know, so it's great to hear that you jumped and that it tumbled you into this incredible, bizarre new emergence of like of art. It's like, that's incredible, man. That's incredible.
Thank you.
Fuck. That's such a mind fuck. Wow, man. Yeah. Well, who knows what's next? You know, 2045. That's Kurzweil's prediction.
Oh, wow. Hey.
2045. And before then, it's going to get really weird.
Yeah. It seems on track, right?
What's crazy is if you read like The Singularity Is Near, his predictions were actually off in the sense that they're happening sooner than he predicted them. You know, the RNA shit in particular, the RNA, the COVID, like, accelerated people, like, his prediction of, like, the RNA vaccines. And, like, you know, next you're going to, and you're already seeing it, you're going to see, like, cancer getting cured. We're already seeing, like, the cure for AIDS. So, like, you're going to start seeing all these, like, again, it's in this, it's weirdly similar to the, like, okay. So I don't mean to go like, this is going to be very confusing maybe because I haven't fully grokked it, but in this alchemical book I'm reading, it talks about this idea of separating the subtle from the gross, right? So like, in other words, like you can look at water and you can separate from water itself things that are like water, you know, like the Bruce Lee meme that's everywhere, become like water. If it's, so we can like, you don't have to have water to understand waterness, right? And so this NFT thing that's happening, it's got a quality to it that for just right now, I would call like singularity-ness. In other words, it's got this like quality to it that seems like antimatter compared to the way we understand what it means to be a human, value, suffering, all the stuff we talked about. And so, what are the things that we understand about being human? Death is one of the things we understand about being human. Aging is one of the things we understand about being human. But if you take this singularity-ness out of NFTs and just look at it, it's like, well, look, here's something that got that no one fucking predicted. No one fucking predicted that all of a sudden people would be able to take digital art, singularize it. It's literally a singularity. You know what I mean? It's a one thing, and then massively profit from that singularity itself, right? Similarly, these other things that we, you know, think are going to be with us all the time, death, old age, disease, it might not be the fucking case.
Right.
You know what I mean? The singularity-ness quality might begin to sort of like show up in other ways that are so not the shit you see on Reddit where it's like promising treatment for pancreatic cancer, but shit like, oh no, this is like penicillin for cancer. You come in, we give you the shot and your cancer is going to go away. Like, what the fuck? And then, and you'll see, it'll have similar qualities as to what's happening with NFTs. It will disrupt industries. It will, all the people who are making money off of chemotherapy, which is great because it heals people. I'm not knocking it like some weirdo, or radiation therapy. All of a sudden it's like, yeah, congrats. You've got that fucking massive radiation gun thing. It's worthless now because I can go. So it's going to, so that's the other quality. It fucking creates these seismic shocks that disrupt entire industries. And then also I think you could expect with all of these emergent things that are just down the line, massive pushback. You know, you guaranteed as soon as the, whatever the vaccine is for cancer comes out, or whatever the anti-aging thing that comes out, oh, it's going to be like, no, that should be fucking illegal. You can't reverse age yourself. Look at you. Oh, well, well, well. Oh, you're 70 and you look like you're 23? Fuck you.
Exactly.
Do you know how many pandas had to die so you could look like you're fucking 23? You know what I mean? And that, I think what that represents, I'm sorry, I'm really rambling here, is like a bifurcation of timelines. You're looking at like one old, musty, shitty, we write on stone and your art goes on paper and you fucking die when you're around 80 and you can't take care of you. And the other one, which is like, no, I'm whatever I want to be. You're born, you have a dick. Well, you're a man. You can't change it. You know what I mean? No, actually, I did. I'm changing it. I can be whatever the fuck I want. I'm going to have a chameleon vagina in my butthole if I want to with the gene therapy that's coming out. You can go fuck yourself. You know what I mean? I'll be whatever I want. I'll turn into a pigeon. No. You're a dad. You can't turn into a fucking pigeon. So that, you know what I mean? Like that's what it's like a meltdown or something. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful, glorious meltdown. I just think I'm going to wrap it up. Anytime you hear somebody doing that thing.
No. That's not how it is.
That's what you need to start looking at.
Exactly. That's how I feel.
Something's coming from that. You know, who knows what? That being said, you should stop making these things, man. They're fucking out.
I know, man.
So are you gonna stop?
Go back to the warehouse.
Go back to the warehouse. So, do you have anything you want to say to people listening right now who are most definitely thinking to themselves, "I want to get into making NFTs." I know a lot of artists listen to this and don't understand it at all. And I'm sure that some people listening are like, "Okay, what do I do?"
Make a Twitter account. And that was like the deal breaker for a lot of my friends back in like February and March. That's where everything's happening. People don't want to go on Twitter or something.
Yeah.
I made a fresh account and I think that's a good move too. Cause I didn't have, you know, if you have a lot of followers, that's the thing. If you have a lot of followers, they are not into NFTs most likely.
Right.
So if you're an artist that has maybe a big following on Instagram or especially if you're just starting out, it's like make a Twitter. It'll suck to have zero followers, but you just got to get in there and you got to follow some people that are doing NFTs and you got to be looking at it and you got to just, you know, keep making your art and observe the community and what's going on. The second would be to, you know, really think about having a cohesive body of work. And that's like something that doesn't come, you can't really force it. It's something that comes after like a long time of experimenting, but you can dial it in. It feels like you're restricting yourself, but if you kind of dial in yourself with some constraints, like I was talking about in the beginning, then that kind of starts to sculpt what your style is. And basically what people are looking for when they're collecting this stuff is, you know, a cohesive style that they can recognize. And also just somebody it's clear that they're in it for the long haul, and that they're into NFTs and it's very organic for me, but it's been clear for me. And like I said, it took a few months of build up before like people really started catching on, but I've been buying these things and talking about them and like celebrating when I buy them and like also supporting my friends and retweeting them and, you know, and like talking to, you know, it's, I'm into NFTs and it's clear to people.
Yeah.
You know, because if I was just an artist that had a bunch of shit going on in the real world and I just want to drop a collection and then you guys buy them and then they can just fuck right off after that, like, and just go. And then that work, hopefully you liked it, because you're probably going to own it forever because they're not promoting and creating new work.
Oh,
so that, right. So that they become more popular and that, whoa. You know, because I was selling all my stuff, the things you were looking at for like $1,700, like those would take me 2 weeks to sell out like 20 of them for like $150. Right.
Yeah.
And so now they, you know, I have to like create new systems to sell them because they'll sell too fast, or like, you know, like people will like lose their transaction fees fighting for them or whatever, wow. You know? But yeah. So the point is like, you got to be in it for the long haul and don't let little dips in the sales of your NFT and in the value of the cryptocurrency to affect you a lot and get your spirits down or whatever. You just got to just plug away. I mean, it's just like anything. So
it's just like podcasting. You like, we podcast cause we love to podcast. I mean, that's it. Like, yeah, I'm a podcast. That's what I do. I love it. I'll never stop doing it. It's just my favorite thing. So it sounds like that. It's like, don't get in it for a cash grab. Don't get in it for like, yeah. Like you need to like respect, cause it's cool. Cause it's more than just I hear you say it's more than the art. It's like the art is a fractal of this like growing community of artists. It's, yeah. Wow. That's so trippy, man. So cool. Cool. Well, where can people find you, JP?
Yeah, Pop Wonder NFT on Twitter is the best place. Pop Wonder World on Instagram is a good way to like just see all my past stuff in a row. But I neglect it compared to Twitter because there's a lot more action on Twitter these days for this stuff.
I love people.
And I don't actually, I'm kind of actually like in the closet on Instagram.
Weird, you man. Know? That's so weird. I get that. It's so funny. People are like, I'm not going on Twitter. It's
yeah.
Like a cesspool. How bizarre is that? That's so strange.
No, it's great if you're in NFT Twitter as a popping place to be.
I'm getting into it as soon as I'm gonna follow all the people you follow.
So I've held back a couple of people or a couple of pieces in my collection, or I even bought one back one day because it was listed for too low. I was like, disrespectful. I bought it back from the person. Cool. And so as soon as you get your wallet set up and everything, I got one coming your way.
What? No, I cannot accept that. That's incredible.
Listen, you don't have a choice. I'll just send it to you.
Thank you. Holy shit. Thank you. It's been a real, really, real pleasure getting to know you. Thank you so much for doing
this. Yeah, likewise, man.
Hare Krishna. That was JP Downer, everybody. Make sure you follow him on Twitter and on Instagram. Big thank you to all of our sponsors. And thank you for listening to this podcast. I love you. And I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.